Case number 08-7089, in the matter of Greater Southeast Community Hospital Foundation, Inc., Advantage Health Plan, Inc., et al., appellants versus Patrick J. Potter, et al. Mr. Lane for the appellants, Mr. Potter for the appellees.
Good morning, Your Honor. I've asked to reserve 2 minutes of my time, if that's agreeable. The first issue presented by in this case is whether the summary dismissal of Advantage's objection solely on the ground that it was not signed by attorney was an appropriate sanction. In the cases involving similar situations, courts have looked beyond rote application of that rule to what they call the full circumstances.
The cases you cited all seemed, maybe I missed one, but it seemed to me they all involved dismissal.
They did, exactly, Judge Ginsburg.
Which is fatal to the case. It's capital punishment for whatever the oversight was, right?
Correct.
That's not true here. Not only was your case not dismissed, but you had time within which to make a conforming filing.
Well, the last part isn't true, Judge Ginsburg.
You had 2 days, didn't you?
The deadline was June 19th for objections, and we filed on June 19th. We actually filed on June 18th, but it was submitted to the court on June 19th. So the date for objections, you're thinking of
the hearing.
You had
until the 21st when the hearing occurred.
Was the hearing, yes, Your Honor. But the date for objections was the 19th. So one of the questions in my mind, you're correct that a dismissal is a capital punishment or however you want to term it. In this case, however, by dismissing the objections, you're putting them in the same situation.
Had the objection been, if there was no time to refile a conforming objection on the 19th, and had it been filed on the 20th, or even voiced on the 21st, the parties would have had earlier notice of it. It's not at all clear that Judge Teel wouldn't have allowed the objection. But there was no effort made to conform.
There was no notice given that or opportunity to correct, Your Honor. That's exactly one of our points.
Did anyone ask for time or ask for an opportunity in light of the initial failing?
Not in light of the initial failing, but in the objections, Advantage did raise the point that was asking for more time so that counsel for the plan committee, because remember Advantage was part of the plan committee, could be retained and that counsel could have time to get ready for the case and ask for a continuance.
When was that?
It was part of the objection, Your Honor.
Part of the objection that was excluded, in other words.
Exactly, Your Honor. It's on page 23 of the appendix.
So all the more reason to have come back smartly with a conforming filing, or at least even a late one.
Well, if one of our points is, Your Honor.
Did Advantage ever ask for time to get its own counsel?
Not separately from that objection, Your Honor.
Okay.
I just wondered, I'm not following the chronology exactly. As I understood it, that the bankruptcy court didn't grant the motion, until the morning of the hearing. Is that right?
Not exactly, Judge Garland. The motion to dismiss the objection was filed on December 20th, right. And the court actually signed it on the 20th. If you look, I believe it's on appendix.
In the district court's opinion, it says on the morning of December 21st, the bankruptcy court entered the striking order.
the judge entered it, but was signed, and actually there is, if you read the district court's order in the case, not the opinion, the order refers to the December 20th striking order. So I think the answer is it was entered on the
21st. When was it entered in the docket?
I believe on the 21st.
And when was Advantage notified that a striking order had been entered?
That I don't know, Your Honor. I'm not sure how service was provided to Advantage.
Well, so then isn't the answer to Judge Ginsburg's question that you didn't have notice
before the hearing?
Before the hearing, because the entrance was at the same time as the hearing.
The same day as the hearing, that's correct.
So you didn't know that the court had entered a motion, had entered a judgment striking the objections until it was too late for you to get lawyers. Is that right?
I think that's correct, Judge Garland.
Did you know the hearing was scheduled for the 21st?
Of course we did, Judge Ginsburg.
Did you send anyone?
No one from Advantage appeared. That was also indicated in the objection that no one was going to appear, that because the objections had been filed in a timely fashion, the assumption was that those objections would be considered and Advantage's position would be heard at the hearing. So the
idea was to file the objection but not show up to argue it?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor, that Mr. Wolf, who signed the objection, had a planned vacation of which he had informed the court, and that's was another reason that he had asked for a continuance in the objection.
Is Mr. Wolf the only employee of this company?
I don't believe so, but actually I don't know, Your Honor.
So you don't have any idea what the company is or anything at all?
No, I don't really.
Okay. If Wolf had shown up, it wouldn't have availed, would it?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Wouldn't have availed him had he shown up on the 21st.
I don't think it would have availed him because he's not an attorney.
Right, because he's not a lawyer.
Exactly. Presumably, Judge Teel would have either not permitted him to speak or just said your objection has been dismissed and moved on to exactly what he did otherwise in the hearing.
And you're not familiar with the service of the objection?
I don't believe it's in the record, Your Honor. But I'm sure it's in the docket sheet.
The district court opinion gave a virtually hourly account of these events. Is it not recounted in there?
I thought that was what Judge Garland was, which he was referring to. Yeah. I can go over it and come back during my rebuttal time and give you an answer.
That'd be a good idea, but let's go on with what you got. That's a good idea.
Okay. If there are no more questions about the first issue, I just sort of summarize our position that beyond rote application of the rule, courts have looked at full circumstances in deciding what sanction is available. And I would say, Judge Ginsburg, yes, we did rely on Rule 41B cases, but in my mind, those conceptually are the same type of cases that would be involved here with sanction, and the question is what level of sanction? Not suggesting that maybe there shouldn't have been a sanction. Maybe the sanction could have been what you suggested, that the court could have informed Mr. Wolf immediately and said, look, if you don't show up by the 21st with a lawyer, then I'm going to dismiss your objection. But in fact, it was just summarily dismissed, and the district court also did not look to any factors but rote application of the rule. The second issue that we raise is whether Section 1109B of the code.
Give me 1 second. Here's the opinion of the district court. While Advantage asserts that, quote, Pillsbury never served the response and motion to strike on Advantage or Mr. Wolf, close quote, that statement is belied by the documentary evidence in Appley's joint appendix, which shows that Pillsbury emailed an electronic copy of its response and motion to strike to Mr. Wolf at 5:45 on Thursday, December 20th, and received a response email from Mr. Wolf a minute later, stating that he was unable to access email until he returned to his office on January 7th. So they did attempt to.
Well, you asked me, Your Honor, excuse me, you asked me about whether he received notice from the court, and that's notice of the motion. I knew that he received motion.
I asked you about service, and that's...
Service of the motion. I thought you meant service of the order, Your Honor.
No, I'm sorry. Service of the objection, because you were saying that even... I thought you were saying that even that...
No, I thought you meant the order, Your Honor, so I apologize if I confused you.
It may have been I. Go ahead.
Just want to raise the second issue briefly, the 1109B issue where the district court ruled
that... Can I just ask for one second about that responsive email? Is that just an automatic email?
I'm sure it is. I'm sure... I forget what the thing is in Outlook, but I'm sure that's probably what it sounds like to me. I'm sorry, Judge Garland.
Do you have a copy of that? Do you have a copy? I don't happen to have one. Do you have a copy of that responsive email there?
I don't believe it's in the record, and no, I don't have a separate copy.
Give you a few extra minutes. Go ahead.
On the 1109B, the question, the district court found that it does not allow a party in interest to file an appeal, as the district court termed it, does not allow parties in interest appellate standing. I think that could be translated to authorization to bring an appeal. As we pointed out in our brief, the language of the statute as well as its legislative history indicates clearly.
You agree you have to be at least a party in interest, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, where have you told us what makes you a party in interest? What makes Mr. Wolf a party in interest?
The court didn't address that question. It specifically indicated it did not.
Why does that matter for us? That is, if you're not a party in interest, we don't have jurisdiction, right?
Well, I don't.
Isn't that right? If you're not a party, if Mr. Wolf is not a party in interest, this court does not have jurisdiction.
Exactly right.
All right.
But,
and so I have to ask the question because it's jurisdictional for us. Mm-hmm. We're required to ask this question whether the court mentions it or you mention it or anybody mentions it. What makes him a party in interest? What makes Mr. Wolf a party in interest?
Right. Mr. Wolf indicated that he was a party in interest because his interests would be affected if the court denied his objection, and he may be liable for suits by unsecured creditors that he represents as representative of the committee.
We have many cases saying, even for Article 3 purposes, that that's not enough, that the possibility of some future litigation is not enough to... particularly the speculative possibility. You're saying somebody might sue him. Is that right? Somebody might sue him for being a bad representative or something? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's...
No one has sued him, right?
That's correct, Judge Garland.
So that's just completely speculative at this point, isn't it? Is there any way to describe it other than speculative?
No, there isn't.
So I guess my question is, not only do we have party and interest jurisdiction, do we even have Article 3 jurisdiction? Is there standing here?
Well, I think that they're standing in the sense that if you look at the test for standing, was there an injury? The injury was that Mr. Wolf was not allowed to appeal solely on the basis the court didn't address.
Well, I wasn't allowed to appeal either. That's not enough of an injury. He has to have some kind of injury in fact.
Well,
tangible.
Excuse me.
Something tangible, concrete,
well,
meaningful.
In my opinion, that the ruling that the law does not allow a party in interest to appeal prior to deciding whether in the factual circumstances that you meet the test as a tangible interest, you don't have an opportunity to show that you are a party in interest because the court has precluded it on a legal ground that 1109B does not allow any party's interest to
bring an
appeal.
Right. But we accept an allegation as true for purposes of establishing standing, so that if you came in and said, well, yes, he's been sued, he may be liable for damages, he needs to get this thing corrected.
Right.
you would have standing. I mean, presumably that would be true. You would have been sued. You wouldn't otherwise say it. But there's nothing like that here.
Not yet, Your Honor.
Is that's the only claim that he might be sued? Is that it?
That's the only claim that.
And who was he? And what's the theory about that again?
He, as the plan representative for the unsecured creditor.
Was he the plan representative, or was Advantage the plan representative?
Well, I think he was the person who was representing Advantage as part of the plan committee.
But the plan committee said Advantage; it didn't say Wolf, right?
Exactly.
So, if there were a suit, the most likely suit would be against Advantage, not against Wolf, because he just happens to work for Wolf. He just happens to work for Advantage.
That could be true, Your Honor. I don't.
Okay. So really do you agree with, in future sorts, the Seventh Circuit held that a party in interest is someone who holds a direct financial stake in the outcome? Is that the correct definition of party in interest?
I thought it was broader than that. I think that if you look, the references are to Rule 2018 of the Bankruptcy Code, and that they talk about interested parties, and they give an example, at least in Collier's, an example is given if you own a house next door to a bankrupt estate house and you're concerned about the house being derelict or whatever, you would be an interested party and therefore would be allowed to intervene in a case. So I think it's broader than what you stated.
The standard in the statute is person aggrieved. Well, not in the statute, but in the case law is person aggrieved, right?
No, that's a different standard, Judge Ginsburg. There were two separate issues about first whether Wolf was a party aggrieved, and we didn't appeal from that part of the decision. But in 1109, the standard is the words are party in interest.
Okay, but the district court said, as you just implied, you're not a person aggrieved.
Exactly, and that's a different part of the decision that we didn't, okay, on which we didn't appeal.
And then went on?
And then went on and talked about the party in interest as a separate. That's at page 58 of the.
Right, I'm looking at that. And said that doesn't confer appellate standing.
Exactly, that's the point.
You may be a party in interest for purposes
exactly
of a bankruptcy proceeding, but not for purposes of appellate jurisdiction.
In our view, is that's an incorrect reading of the statute, and that's exactly the point on which we're appealing.
Right, but all the courts that have addressed this have said that person aggrieved is the test, right?
I don't think all the courts that have addressed that. We cited. I'm sorry.
Any circuit held that party aggrieved is not the standard?
Yeah, I believe that we cited. Let me just.
Because Collier says every circuit that's addressed it has said that. And I was just admit I haven't checked every circuit, but.
Your Honor, we cited the case American Ready Mix, which relies on International Trade Administration. I'm looking at page 22 of our brief at the bottom paragraph, in which they stated in International Trade, which is Second Circuit, 1991, and I'm just quoting that, 1109B expands the right to be heard to a wider class than those who qualify under the person aggrieved standard.
Yes, it expands, but that's not about appellate jurisdiction. That's the right to be heard in the bankruptcy proceeding.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that is about appellate jurisdiction, that, in fact, 1109 covers appellate jurisdiction as well as the right to be heard in the bankruptcy.
All right, let me just ask
one. It talks about any issue in a case, and a case under this chapter would include.
But that's not what the circuit held. The circuit didn't hold what you're saying now.
Tenth Circuit.
The Tenth Circuit, Your Honor?
In Ready Mix. In American Ready Mix. And as the district court pointed out, they went on, where they were quoting the RPI case from the Second Circuit, which squarely held that merely being a party in interest is insufficient to confer appellate standing.
And I think that's, I think there's a little bit of confusion, Judge Ginsburg, here, because I think, as you've pointed out today and Judge Garland has pointed out, that standing is Article III, and you really have to look at every case. And if we looked at any statute, we couldn't say just by looking at the statute that a particular appellant or petitioner had standing. You have to look at the facts.
There's statutory, what we sometimes call prudential standing, and there's Article III standing. And the statutory question is whether it's party aggrieved or party in interest. And the constitutional question is whether there's injury in fact. Let me ask one last standing question, right? So the Supreme Court has held, as so have we, that when there are two parties in a case and one clearly has standing, as Advantage does, that we don't need to consider whether the other party has it. What arguments did Wolf make below that Advantage did not make?
I think the only argument below that it did make that Advantage did not make was the 1109B argument that it was a party in interest.
Well, but that's in order to get into court. What argument would it, if it were a party in interest, did it say, did Wolf say what argument?
I think the only
were a party of interest, what would he argue?
I think the only factual argument that Wolf made that was different, that even if he could not represent Advantage because he was not an attorney, he could have filed the objection as an individual. And so that's a separate argument that could be made.
And did he make that argument below?
Yes, he did, Your Honor, to the district court.
And his basis for the idea that he could have made the objection?
I think it, again, comes back to the party in interest.
No, I know, but the party in interest part, but this is on some theory that he was not Advantage's representative, but he was representative of someone else?
Or himself.
Or himself?
Right.
Was he a creditor, personally?
I don't think he was a creditor personally, Judge Ginsburg.
So in what sense, then, could he file the objection as an individual?
I believe it was on the grounds that I have told you previously, that he was concerned about his personal liability in this situation.
Okay. Questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Patrick Potter. I'm arguing the position on behalf of the respondents this morning at council table with me, because only one counsel is permitted to argue per side is Mr. Leach. He represents the plan committee, and he was on the briefs with us as well. Your Honor, Your Honors, with respect to the striking order, I would like to make two points. The first is that neither federal rule of civil procedure 41B nor the case law that has developed under that is applicable to this proceeding. No, 41.
Can I ask you about the chronology here? So they don't know, even if they had been notified, they wouldn't know until the morning of the hearing that the objections had been struck, right?
They would not have known. Yeah, correct, Your Honor. They would not have known until they received a copy of it, which was posted on the ECF, I believe, on the morning of the 21st.
Right. So that would not have given them time before the hearing. Even if Mr. Wolf had been in the country, that would not have given them time to provide a lawyer by the time of the hearing.
If one's lawyer selection decision-making process was wait until you see whether your pleading gets bounced.
No one had ever notified Wolf before that his papers would be struck if he...
That's not quite correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
There was a notice that was issued on the 14th of December. It's a matter of record and is referenced in the district court's decision. The notice indicates that if you don't appear at the hearing on the 21st, then any pleading that you file, show up on the 21st, any pleading that you may file, that the parties would request that it be stricken. So that was notice that this was a conceivable outcome. If you allow,
there was no notice about the possibility that it would be stricken because he was, because it was a corporation not represented by an attorney. That didn't occur. The judge's decision on that ground at the earliest, wasn't entered until the
morning.
Correct.
The notice that went out on the 14th did not say that if you file a pleading, a corporate filing pro se,
yeah.
There was no way to sort of predict that. There's no way to predict that an entity would do that. But correct. The notice said if you file a timely objection, but you don't appear for the hearing, then we would be requesting that the bankruptcy court strike the pleading, overrule the objection.
Who would be requesting?
The parties that were moving pursuant to the 9019 motion.
Was this an order of the court that you're saying?
It was right? Not an order of the court.
This was just your own papers.
Correct. It's a notice that's very common in bankruptcy proceedings.
Where is this notice? Where do we find it in the record?
You'll find you'll find it quoted in the district court decision at Appendix 42.
Whereabouts?
It's the underlying section on page 42.
Yep. Under the number six.
Two-thirds of the way the page, down the page.
So it's the last sentence of that underlined portion to which you alert us, correct?
Correct. Again, it does not address the issue that Judge Garland has raised. But
not specifically, but it says if you don't show up with evidence to support your objection, you may be disregarded.
This is
that's your argument, right? That is, Pillsbury will request this. Right? There's no rule in bankruptcy that if you file objections in advance and don't appear, and they're sufficient to win, and you don't appear at the hearing, that it's going to be stricken.
There's no federal bankruptcy rule, and to my knowledge, there's not a local rule, but it's a practice that is as common as it gets in the bankruptcy courts to issue a type of notice that says for those who don't appear at a hearing, the court has the ability to.
Yes, but the bankruptcy court didn't issue. I'm just saying this is
correct.
This is only issued by the law firm.
This was correct. It was issued by the law firm. The notice, though, was issued at the instruction of the court, of the bankruptcy court, at the hearing that was conducted on the 14th. The court didn't specify all of the terminology that would, he didn't instruct us as to what to put in the notice, other than, of course, notice of the hearing on the 21st.
And this wasn't his standard notice, or?
This is a standard notice that would be issued in a bankruptcy proceeding.
Right, but
are there any prior instances of it issuing in this case?
Prior instances of?
Of the same notice with respect to an earlier hearing or anything else?
It's a case that went on for 4 or 5 years, Your Honor, and
you're saying this is standard, right?
This is a standard notice that you would issue indicating, in a bankruptcy proceeding, indicating that if you don't show up for a hearing, the court may, many notices actually indicate the court may not conduct the hearing. The court may actually cancel the hearing if objections are not filed or if parties don't appear.
So I think this would be easy if this had been issued by the court. But it's not issued by the court. It would be easy if the court said, if you don't appear for the hearing, I may strike your objections. But that's not what it says. All it says is if Pillsbury is telling you that if you don't appear for the hearing, we're going to ask the court to strike your objections.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Your Honor, the reason
I'm confused now. I thought you sent out the notice because the bankruptcy judge says send out the standard notice. Is that not the case?
I'm sorry, Judge.
I thought you sent out the notice because on the 14th the bankruptcy judge tells you to send out the standard notice. Is that not the
case?
That's
correct, Your Honor.
The standard notice or just to give notice?
He said to give notice. I took that as a notice that we would typically issue in a proceeding such as this.
All right, so when your notice goes out, the bankruptcy judge doesn't give another notice.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
This was. There were other notices that subsequently went out, but this was the notice that we sent out on the 14th, pursuant to the judge's instructions, because he indicated, because he knew the hearing would be one full week later, he wanted a notice to go out that day, that Friday afternoon.
Is the point of this to be a notice that a hearing is going to happen? A notice of what is? How would you describe this as a notice of what?
This was a notice of the hearing
on the 21st.
On approval of the terms of the Bankruptcy Rule 9019 settlement that had been reached between my firm and the plan committee.
And was there ever a notice issued by the court of this hearing?
No. That's very common that the parties would issue the notice.
Okay.
If I may then turn to the second issue, and that is with respect to the standing order, I'd like to make three points. The first is that the district court obviously held that the aggrieved party standard is applicable here, and that Mr. Wolf was not an aggrieved party. As I think the court pointed out in colloquy with
can I ask you to back up for just 1 second? Counsel for Advantage doesn't seem to know anything about what Advantage is. Was Advantage ever represented by a lawyer?
Never in the bankruptcy proceeding, Your Honor.
In the whole proceeding, they weren't?
Correct.
And what was, for some background here, what was their role in this, in the bankruptcy? Why were they a member of the committee?
Advantage was, number one, a creditor in the case, and as a creditor, they were entitled to request that the Office of the United States...
Well, they must have been a big creditor, I take it, because they were one of the two representatives on the...
There were larger and smaller creditors, Your Honor.
There were much larger
creditors on the committee.
Did they... what kind of company is it? What do they do with respect to the hospital?
I don't think they do anything anymore, Your Honor.
What did they do at the time?
I think they were involved in the healthcare industry. I don't exactly know what they did, Your Honor.
I see. They did participate in the hearing, in the bankruptcy proceeding?
They participated in committee meetings.
Yeah.
The committee.
Any filings?
Advantage, no.
This is the first time they've tried to file.
To my knowledge, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
The case went on for many years before I became actively involved, but I'm unaware of Advantage ever having, and there's certainly nothing in the record that would support the proposition that Advantage had ever filed anything in the case.
Okay. Thank you.
The three points that I would make on the standing issue, Your Honor, are number one, the agreed party standard for appellate status is the standard. It's been standard in the United States for 110 years, and this is basically what the district court held. The cases that Your Honor cited, Judge Garland, the Ready Mix case, if you read other cases that are cited in the decision, they all consistently hold the same thing. There are at least six other circuits that, since the amendment to the since the enactment of the bankruptcy code, which was the first time you see Section 1109.
No circuit has held that party in interest is the standard. Is that right?
I'm unaware of any cases that say that a party in interest has appellate standing.
Now, what about the constitutional standing issue?
Which case?
The constitutional standing issue. The question of whether they have Article III standing. The question of whether Mr. Wolf has Article III standing. What is his injury, as far as you understand it?
I don't know of any injury. I don't think he's a party in interest, Your Honor, which was the final point that I was going to make, which is that even if Section 1109 is determined by this court, and I think it would be the first court of appeals in the country to do so, to hold that 1109 provides appellate standing, that Mr. Wolf is still himself not a party in interest, because the case law says a party in interest is someone in a bankruptcy proceeding who's got legal rights they're entitled to be protected. And Mr. Wolf, there's no dispute, is not a creditor. He's never appeared in the case. Mr. Wolf never filed anything in the case. He's had absolutely no involvement whatsoever in the case. And there's been no articulated legal right of Mr. Wolf that has been implicated in the bankruptcy proceedings, particularly with respect to the matters, some of which are before the court and others are not. There's been absolutely no implication whatsoever of a legal right. So as a result, he's not even a party in interest, even if 1109 was the standard for appellate standing. That's all I have, Your Honor.
Lane, you were well over. Oh, excuse me. Are we hearing from anyone else or not?
I'm sorry.
Are we hearing from co-counsel? No. You were well over, but if you need a minute to, not to repeat, but to rebut, you're welcome to it.
I thought that was all your time, Judge Ginsburg. I just want to try to answer your question. The best I can find is on Appendix 47. You asked about when the notice was given, if it was served on the parties. And if you look in the first full paragraph on page 47, you'll see on the morning of December 21st, I won't read the whole thing, but that's the best I can do about when it was served. And you'll see it was denied the motion to extend the hearing date. And is solely on the basis that it was not signed by an attorney.
I've forgotten about that question, but I'm happy you did not. Thank you.
I try to be responsive, Judge Ginsburg. I'd just like to point out, if you look at Appendix 11, which is the case hearing summary by Judge Teel, on the question of whether the December 14th notice by Pillsbury, what kind of a notice it was, and I think you asked the question, Judge Garland, about, and I think you did too, Judge Henderson, was it a notice of the hearing? If you look at the last line of the judge's note, you'll note the settlement, accordingly, either party may file a motion to approve the settlement, and if the settlement is approved, then they would withdraw another motion. But I think you'll have to recall in this case that the December 14th notice was just a notice of a hearing, and then on December 17th, a motion to approve the settlement with the settlement agreement itself was filed with the parties. So
this document, which is Appendix 11, was filed by the court on December 14th, right?
I believe that's right.
That's what it says in the top right.
Yes,
corner.
Exactly. Yeah.
And does this give a notice of the hearing on the 21st?
I don't believe that it does. That was part of, I think, Judge Teel's oral instructions during the hearing that day.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. If there are no other questions.
No, Mr. Wayne, thank you. Mr. Potter, thank you. Case is submitted.
I think he took some stuff with him. So.